from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That is Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Action-packed show for you today. The Pro Football Hall of Famer, Joe Klecko, is going to stop by 20 minutes from now. Seth Payne will join us at 7:20 p.m. Eastern, 4:20 p.m. Pacific. And then we will continue to spin the QB carousel wheel with Dallas Cowboys reporter for The Athletic, John Machota, who is going to join us at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific. But first off, producing this fine extravaganza, and we'll get into something that I saw on social media today about my producer extraordinaire, which I have to question and I don't believe, is the aforementioned hot take hickey.
I don't know about that hot take hickey.
We'll get into that factoid that I learned today about hot take hickey that I was really surprised about and thought there's no way that it could be true coming up later on in the program. But where we got to start today, you guessed it, Aaron bleepin' Rodgers. No, he has not emerged out of wherever he's in hiding right now, I guess you could say, a part of this darkness retreat. We have no update on if Aaron Rodgers has seen the light at the end of the tunnel and has emerged and is now done with this darkness retreat. We have no update on that. But there is reporting about Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know if we have to take this reporting with a grain of salt, because everything I hear from Aaron Rodgers' mouth I take with a grain of salt, but Aaron Rodgers on Radio Row went on with the Pat McAfee show, and he went out of his way 2 weeks ago in the lead up to the Super Bowl week to say, none of these insiders know jack pretty much about me, if we're going to clean it up a little bit. Well, the other day, Bob McGinn has covered the Packers for a long time. He was on with Ty Dunn on Ty Dunn's great network, and Bob McGinn said the Packers are disgusted with Aaron Rodgers. And in that report, if you read it in its entirety, Bob went even as far to say that if Aaron Rodgers is somehow back on the roster, they would start Jordan Love over Aaron Rodgers, which right away, I said I don't buy that for a single second, the back end of that. But the front end of it, that they're disgusted with Aaron Rodgers, that doesn't surprise me if that is true. Now, I think they're at a point in the relationship where both sides, and I said this 9,000 times, and I did not feel this way the last 2 years. I was like the lone radio host that said Rodgers is going to be back in Green Bay. But this year and this offseason, even John Kuhn, close friend of Aaron Rodgers, said it on this show, it does feel different. And it's up in the air if he's going to be back in Green Bay. And I really think what changed here is you got to remember Gutekunst drafted Jordan Love. Then Rodgers went on to win two MVPs, and this was the first year where Rodgers was not great ever since they drafted Jordan Love. And not only was he not great, the team didn't make the playoffs. In an NFC, where if we're being honest, there weren't a lot of strong teams this year in the NFC outside of Philadelphia and San Francisco. Cowboys, pretender. Vikings, pretender. So we weren't asking the Green Bay Packers to go 13-3 again. We were just asking them to beat the Lions in the final week of the season. And I don't mean it this way, but this is the way that, you know, Rodgers views the Lions as the lowly Lions. And he looks at the Lions as basically their gum on the bottom of his cleat. And he lost to them twice. And late in the game, he threw a crucial interception, made a crucial mistake, and they didn't end up going to the playoffs. So I think after that, Gutekunst, who saw Rodgers go 13-3, 13-3, 13-3, and back-to-back-to-back years and come up short, now you see the team don't make the playoffs, and it's back to your initial plan to run Aaron Rodgers out of town. And also, Aaron Rodgers, at times throughout the year, you wondered how happy he was in Green Bay. So I think both sides are looking at this, where they're staring at one another, and they're waiting for the first party to say, guys, this isn't working out. We're done. But no one wants to be the bad guy here. And two things are going to happen. And this is what I really do believe. either Rodgers is going to emerge from this darkness retreat and say, I want out, or I still want to be in Green Bay. And then either way it goes, if it's Rodgers saying I want out, then he could be the quote-unquote bad guy here. If he wants to stay, then it's up to Gutekunst. Are you going to play nice, or are you going to be the bad guy and say, we don't want you? Or maybe whenever Rodgers emerges out of this darkness retreat, maybe then Gutekunst gets on the phone and says, we made a decision. We've had enough trade conversations. We have enough chatter. We know what we can get for you. We don't want you. Pick the team that you want to go to, and we'll find a way to get the deal done. But that's the way that it appeared it was heading to. And then today, I don't know who was trying to throw this out there. I don't know what the reasoning was, but you had two respected NFL insiders. These are not from some random people that you never heard of. These are two of the more respected NFL insiders in the business. Tom Pelissero and Jeff Darlington. Both clearly had the same source, because this was the first time in like the last month that we heard something positive if you are in the camp that you want Rodgers back in Green Bay. And Jeff Darlington on ESPN said today that a very important Green Bay Packers source believes that Aaron Rodgers will be back with the team this season. Then Tom Pelissero, who went on the Rich Eisen show, said something similar and added this: as long as Rodgers is fully bought in, the Packers want him back. So when you hear the Darlington part of it, a very important Green Bay Packers source believes that Rodgers will be back with the team this season, it's like, oh, that's intriguing. That goes against what I think the norm has been this offseason, of the expectation that Rodgers is going to get traded to the Jets, he's going to get traded to the Raiders, whoever it may be. But when you hear the Pelissero part of it and the quote of, as long as he's fully bought in, the Packers want him back, that makes me wonder how much of the Packers actually want him back. Because if the Packers wanted him back, wouldn't they just go out of their way to not even add that front part? But I think it speaks to where the relationship is and how fractured the relationship appears to be, where that same person doesn't even trust that Aaron wants to be back and wants to be fully bought in. So that's what's confusing to me here, Hickey, is that clearly they have the same source, and it's a very important Green Bay Packers source believes that Rodgers will be back with the team this season. So then I guess if we're going to put two and two together and you mesh the Darlington report and the Pelissero report, that same source, I guess, must feel, who's very important in Green Bay, that Rodgers wants to be back, because why would you then say that Rodgers will be back with the team this season and one, I guess, notification to Darlington, and then Pelissero, it's as long as he's fully bought in, the Packers want him back. So if that source is the same, which I have no reason to believe that they're different sources, I'm going to assume that this source either is sending a message to Rodgers, which I don't think Rodgers cares, you better be fully bought in or we don't want you, or that source believes that Rodgers wants to stay in Green Bay. The bottom line here, and you can interpret this however you want, I think I'm going to take a page out of Hickey's book here, where I'm going to get stubborn, I'm going to stomp on the ground, I'm going to dig my heels in, and I'm going to trust my first instinct. I know that we have seen, especially in this last 3 years, it looked like he's going to get dealt, and then someone like John Kuhn comes on this show and says 75% chance that Rodgers is going to be back in Green Bay. And this has a similar feel, where it's been so much doom and gloom, so much negativity, so much thought that he's not going to be back. And then today is the day of positivity, and let's uplift the Packers fans that still want Aaron Rodgers, and let's try to make it seem that the Packers still want Aaron Rodgers back. This, to me, today out of all days, it seems a little fishy. And either this is the source having wishful thinking, or the source trying to send a message, but I would be surprised, and I would still be operating under the expectation that Aaron Rodgers at some point this year gets dealt. And the reason why I think it will happen this offseason is the last 3 years before this season, they had a window, they were close, yet so far, losing twice in the NFC title game, and then another time in the divisional round. This year, you saw the team regress. You saw Rodgers regress. And do I still think Rodgers can play at a great level? Absolutely. But at this point, do you think you could win with Rodgers in the next 2 to 3 years? That's what you got to ask yourself. And I don't think much is going to change with the Packers and Rodgers in terms of getting anywhere closer to winning a Super Bowl. So if you're Gutekunst and you don't think you could win a Super Bowl in the next 2 to 3 years with Aaron Rodgers, it makes sense to go back to your initial plan of Jordan Love is the guy that replaces Aaron Rodgers. And I think that will go into effect and into full force this offseason. Hickey, where are you today? Because I know this is the first time in 3 years that we have agreed on this whole situation where the last 2 years you've been, Rodgers is getting dealt. I've been in the camp, he's going to stay. And this offseason so far, we have both been seeing eye to eye, which very rarely happens when it comes to Aaron Rodgers. And we both believe he's going to get dealt. Does the Darlington and Pelissero reports today make you go, hold on, wait a second?
Not at all. When it comes to Aaron Rodgers, honestly, at this point, I don't really believe anything that's being reported or speculated or said. I think he's leaving. I think the Packers want to move on. You can have maybe one source that maybe wants to keep him but is outvoted. I think that's maybe what's going on here and try to sway, you know, public perception or try to force Aaron Rodgers to feel like he needs to come back.
But Rodgers doesn't care.
No, he's in his darkness retreat. He's doing whatever he wants to do. I think he's getting traded.
When does he emerge, you think, from the darkness retreat? This is supposed to be 4 days, right? I feel like it's been 4 days. Now, we don't know exactly when he entered.
I would probably say, if I had to surmise from how he phrased it last week,
tonight
I would
or
probably
tomorrow?
Say Sunday.
Oh, Sunday?
Is when he went in.
Oh,
so
okay. Gotcha.
It's Wednesday, so we're looking at day four-ish. So probably around this time, maybe tomorrow.
I feel like there needs to be a big reveal when he gets out of wherever he is right now.
I don't think
like Groundhog Day.
The opposite. I think he'll go into hiding.
Well,
I don't think he's going to emerge.
Well, yes, there's not going to be cameras there.
And him, I am out. Yeah. I am here, everyone. I'm seeing my shadow, to use your Groundhog Day analogy, whatever. I'm not seeing my shadow. Spring is here. I'm getting traded. I don't think we'll have a big announcement of him exiting this darkness retreat, if you will.
Is it Rodgers Tuesdays on the Pat McAfee show?
Yes, sir.
I think Tuesday is the big test next week. Not that I don't think he's scheduled in the offseason, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a Tuesday, but the first time he's going to make public comment is going to be on with Pat McAfee and AJ Hawk.
Absolutely.
So I guess we have to wait. And if I had to take a guess here, he goes on McAfee. They talk about the darkness retreat. We find out maybe some clarity about what the heck is actually a darkness retreat. And then after that, I think he plays it like this. You be McAfee. You ask me if I made a decision about my future.
Aaron, you've been in the darkness retreat. You've been light deprived. Have you had any clarity? Have you seen the light, Aaron, of where you are playing next year?
You know, Pat, I gave this a lot of thought, and I'm going to keep those feelings to myself, and there's going to be some conversations over the next few days. And you know why he's going to take that approach, Hickey? Because the guy is a drama-seeking whore. That's what he is. He loves the drama, and he's just going to spin the wheel, and delay this further and further and further until the Packers eventually be the quote-unquote bad guys and say, okay, we're done with you. That's what I think will happen.
Well, I guess in defense is what I'll say of Aaron Rodgers. In this specific scenario of if he goes up Pat McAfee and drags it out longer is this. I don't think he can just come out and say, I want to trade. I don't think he can just come out and say, I'm gone from the Packers, because you do have to find a team that, is willing to work with you. I think it opens
he
up
knows
like
who the teams
a can of worms.
The Raiders and Jets are willing.
Or just where does he want to go? Maybe he doesn't want to go either of those teams. Maybe he looks at a team like, I don't know, Miami.
But Miami then has to want to get rid of Tua, which they're not going to.
We just assume because the Jets are very interested and the Raiders are very interested, he wants to go there. Maybe those two teams where he said, I'm absolutely not going there.
Potentially.
And it's the Commanders, let's just say, for whatever reason. Just, I want to play in
Washington.
What a
going away present for Daniel Snyder.
Eric Bieniemy, Ron Rivera, get me there.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
I would agree, but again, with Aaron Rodgers, can't rule anything out.
That
if that's
true.
The case,
expect
it
the
definitely
unexpected.
Makes it harder to just say, I'm getting traded, I'm leaving, and I want to go to Washington, let's say.
Do you think we'll know when he will give us, if you had to take a guess on a date right now, When do you think we get a better sense of if he's going to be back with the Packers or if he's going to get traded? Because when the announcement comes, it either has to be whatever insider has it, Rodgers intends to leave the Packers or Rodgers intends to return to Green Bay. When do you think we get to that step of the process?
I would say by St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
I think he will be true to his word. It's a dangerous game to play with him. I think he will be true to his word when it comes to not holding the team hostage. And especially if you're going to get traded or you think, I want to leave and go somewhere else, and maybe the Packers are maybe even making that decision for you and say, we're going to trade you, you can't drag this out. That, you know, you also got to get the new team to get going here. So I'll say St. Patrick's Day.
March 17th.
We'll know whether he's staying at least or going. We may not know the team, and it may not happen then, but I think we'll know if he's staying or going.
Got it. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. The newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Joe Klecko, joins us next.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
20 past the hour. It is The Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Congratulations are in order to our next guest, who I'm really fired up to talk to, and I'm a proud graduate of Temple University. And right now, I'm actually wearing a cherry and white Temple Owls football jersey with the number 72 on the front and the last name of Klecko on the back. And now joining us on The Zach Gelb Show is the newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in the great Joe Klecko. Joe, being able to hear Pro Football Hall of Famer in front of your name probably has a nice ring to it, right?
It is sweetness to my ears. It's been a great ride, but this whole time as we've been announcing it, it's been a run in the Klecko family for sure.
What goes through your mind when you think about it now, basically 2 weeks later? I know you've known for a while with the way that they inform you, but what goes through your mind when you look back and you go, wow, I finally made the Hall of Fame?
Really, it is it's like one of them things, you know, the top of the mountain, and you know, it's a pedestal that not many people reach, and it takes a long time even to sink in, because you know, I was sitting with a friend of mine one day in his office, and we were talking about it, and he goes, you have to still learn that you belong. You know, it's because you know, I waited so long too. You know, you always have that doubts that creep in, and now that that's over and done, it was a process, you know, even to think about being accepted, you know. And then when we finally went out to Arizona and they announced it, and then we met with a lot of the other Hall of Fame guys there and all, and you know, everybody was just so gracious. The old guys, you know, when you go to a new team, a football team, you're given a cold shoulder a little bit sometimes by some guys, but this was not the case. Everybody that, you know, we were talking with and met, and it was more welcoming than anything.
Your last year playing football was in 1988. It's nothing that you could have changed throughout this entire process. Your career was great. It is what it was, right? And it was in the hands of somebody else. I know you talked about some doubts. How did you kind of remain positive? Because it had to be frustrating when so many people that are in the Hall of Fame keep on telling you, you belong, you belong, you belong.
Well, you know, it was, and, you know, after a while, you really just kind of keep going with the flow, and, you know, you get that call, and it's kind of like, hey, Joe, I think maybe this is the year, and then it doesn't happen. And, you know, I never got discouraged about it. You know, I always, like, I've always told everybody that if it's my time and God wants me there, then I'll be there. You know, and I accepted that, you know, and you know, when it finally came, though, it was really exciting. But you know, I didn't get discouraged. I never was down about it. But you know, I just figured if it was to be, it was to be.
Pro Football Hall of Famer Joe Klecko is here with us on the Zach Gelb Show. Take me through the day where Joe Namath showed up at your door, knocked on your door, and told you were going to Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. My wife and my daughter had kept it from me, but I stayed home because they needed me, they said, for something. And he was really hilarious because I was expecting someone to be delivering lunch, you know. And here, my Lord, it's Joe Namath in his gold jacket with about 14 people standing behind him with cameras. So it was exciting. It was really a thrill. I mean, just an exhilarating thrill. It was fantastic.
You probably had to pinch yourself, right, to make sure that it was real?
Oh, no doubt. You know, as you know, as I watched it, and I'm sitting there, and I'm talking about it, and I'm saying to Joe, you know, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I said, you know, I got to admit, Joe, I said, it's never been better to see you than it is now. I mean, it was really a buildup. It was a crescendo. It really was.
Now, you became a finalist through the senior committee, so you knew there was a shot to get in this year. And I know Gary Myers was pretty optimistic about your chances to finally get enshrinement into the Hall of Fame. Did you have any sense that day that Joe, well, maybe not Joe, but that you were going to get informed that, hey, you made the Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, like Gary said, I had made the three finalists. And, you know, he says, Joe, nothing's written in stone yet. He said, but, you know, usually, you know, it's a rubber stamp. But, you know, I told him, I said, listen, I'm a construction business. And until I sign on the dotted line or get the check, nothing's ever done. So, you know, I guess Joe Namath coming to the door that day was me finally getting a check that, you know, it was a long-awaited.
Pro Football Hall of Famer Joe Klecko is here with us. So coming up this summer, it's going to be a day of celebration. It's also going to be a day where people reflect and remember your career. How do you want people to remember your career and what you did on the football field?
I just want them to remember the baby. I was the guy you can rely on. I was the guy that everybody depended on. I was the guy that was always going to be there, no matter what the score, what any consideration of the game was, cold, wet, hot. You know, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that there was one guy you could really count on, and that was me. And, you know, that's the way I played the game. I played the game, you know, like a lot of guys talk about that I played against. You know, it didn't matter what score it was, whether it be, you know, 10-10 or 30-0. I came the same way every single play. You had to get ready. So I like that about me.
The New York Sack Exchange, obviously iconic. It's just one of those nicknames of a group that people are going to remember for years and years still to come. Your memories about playing and being a part of the New York Sack Exchange?
Well, it was really exciting. Reason being is we were a bunch of young guys, and New York Jets hadn't really gotten much fame up to then. And then, you know, the draft choices when Marty Lyons and Mark Gastineau got drafted 1 and 2 that year. And the next year we basically became the Sack Exchange. You know, all of a sudden, you know, people were coming out of the woodwork. You know, shoe companies wanted to sign us. You know, everybody wanted us as far as, you know, appearances and things. And it was really, really falling off the cliff as far as something you never could possibly imagine as a youngster. And, you know, we were a bunch of young guys playing hard. And that was one of the great things that, you know, was that we can take to our graves is we played hard and we played together. And being a Sack Exchange really, I mean, it entered a new phase into our life, you know, with the notoriety.
What did you realize the importance of it, just wondering?
Well, the importance of it really was that the reason we got the name and the reason we got the notoriety is we were good.
Yeah.
I mean, the importance of it was we were able to do things that other people couldn't do. And at that time, you know, we were like one sack off the record. Sacks weren't kept as a record yet, but we had 66 sacks that year. And I think the record now is 70. And, you know, that was held by the Eagles. But, you know, we were right there in that the whole time. And, you know, it's fun to be recognized as, you know, as a group that had to be reckoned with. And at times we struck fear into guys' eyes.
There's a lot of times with the Hall of Fame, there's guys that have to wait and wait and wait. And for years we wonder why they didn't get in. Like, we went through this entire situation with Jerry Kramer, and thankfully he eventually got in. When you try to pinpoint a reason, Joe Klecko, do you have any idea why it took this long?
You know, somebody said to me one day, I was talking to Joe Horgan, who's the guy who's been running the Hall of Fame for a million years. He knows everybody. It was great talking to a guy like Eddie. He knew Bronco Nagurski and Red Grange. I'm like, oh my Lord, you know? So, you know, talking to him, he had told me one time when I was in the modern day voting that the voters were asking about me, like, well, what position does he play? You know, and they were trying to put me into a category, and they couldn't seem to do it. And they asked Joe DeLamalur, the great guard from the Buffalo Bills I played against. He goes, does it really matter position?
So, yeah, the position shouldn't matter, right? You dominated. That was the bottom line.
Right, exactly. And for me, you know, really, you know, convincing yourself as you go away every year and you don't get it, you know, I said, I'm very proud of the guys that I played against in the Hall of Fame, always talking about, hey, you're the toughest guy, or you were one of the toughest guys, or, you know, name me or one other person. Like, I remember John Hanna saying, you know, that myself and Howie Long were the two toughest guys he ever played against, you know. So those kind of accolades were real good, you know, to take away. But, you know, there was always that missing element of, you know, the Hall of Fame.
Take me through the days when you were known as Jim Jones when you were playing semi-professional football and how you ended up at our school, Temple.
That's fun. Yeah, I left high school. I didn't get any scholarships or anything like that. And, you know, I wasn't going to pay for college. And we were not a family of means. So I went to work, and then one day I was out, you know, watching a softball game, and one of the guys who was coaching this Aston Knights team said to me, hey, Joe, we got a bunch of guys that came out that I may know and all. And I went out to watch them play. And, you know, I mean, I came out to practice, and, you know, I started up, and, you know, I was pretty good at it. So I played for the Aston Knights, and that actually got me a scholarship to go to Temple.
That's an incredible story. So obviously you played your college ball for the legendary Wayne Harden. When did you realize that you could be great and do this for a living, maybe professionally one day?
Well, I think what it was in my junior year, the scouts started coming around and inquiring about me and wanting to interview me, you know. So, you know, I mean, you know, I realized that when we were playing the Penn States of the world, and, you know, one of the big reasons, like, Penn State could never run on us was because of me. And, you know, they were talking about these All-Americans that I would play against and all, and I didn't have too many problems with these big All-Americans they were talking about. So, you know, I figured, you know what, if these guys are being touted as great players, you know, maybe I do have a chance. So I'd say my junior year came around, and I started realizing, you know, that I could possibly do this.
I know your son Dan pretty well, and we know what he ended up doing in the NFL as well, winning a few Super Bowls. What was your conversations like with Dan once you got the notification, the knock on the door from Joe Namath?
Oh, my kids are, well, you know, it's dad. So, you know, they were just, you know, 10 shades to the clouds, and my grandkids were jumping up and down. So, you know, of course, Danny and my son Michael and Joshua, all of them were on the phone, and, you know, we were talking, and then they all came over to the house the next day, and, you know, it was exciting. So, you know, getting the hurrahs from them and my grandkids too, that was fantastic.
So your grandkids know, hey, Grandpa's a pretty big deal. He's a pretty badass.
Yeah. Well, no, they still think I'm Grandpa. You know, so it really doesn't matter to them. They're always testing me and carrying on, and I love it.
This current group for the Jets, they had a really impressive season on the defensive side of the ball. What stood out to you with guys like Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams?
Well, again, they're great players. They, you know, I mean, Gardner got, you know, the Rookie of the Year, and Quinton's a perennial All-Pro right now. He just is a constant dominant force. And, you know, they have a pretty good array around them. You know, and, you know, it's not bad when you play for a head coach as a defensive-minded guy. So, you know, they had a great year. I mean, they have a few things to plug in, of course, which is the biggest plug at quarterback. And if they can accomplish that and, you know, patch up that offensive line, you know, the Jets could be possibly, you know, make a real run at something here.
Are you hoping they find a way to pull off a deal for Rodgers?
No. No, I don't. I don't think Rodgers is a fit with the young guys. You know, I relate them to myself with a young team that came up when we started winning, and why it was a good fit with all of us, because we all worked together and came up together, you know? And I just think, you know, I've watched Rodgers over the years. He's a great player. Hey, listen, you don't become MVP three times without doing what he's done. But, you know, when he didn't have the perfect arrangement with receivers and game plan and the line, you know, his attitude was condescending so much to the players, even when they would come back to the huddle and all. And I can't see that, you know, like Wilson, you know, he won the Rookie of the Year offensive player. I can't see him coming back to the huddle and, you know, Rodgers lambasting him for running the wrong route, you know. I mean, you just, it's not going to fit. I don't see it. You know, I see a guy like Carr, who's a, you know, who's an all-pro. He hasn't been an MVP, but he's had some great years. But I just can't see, you know, them going after, after, you know, a guy that has had all his years and had his way, and then when it doesn't turn out his way, he goes dark. You know, I just can't see it.
So you could see him ruin the locker room is what you're saying.
Absolutely. You got a young bunch of guys that are fighting with each other, and you have a bring a guy in who has his own opinion about things. I think that can turn a bad feeling in that locker room.
Pro Football Hall of Famer Joe Klecko still has a great ring to it. I know it's never going to get old. Joe, we're so happy for you and your family. Thanks so much. Appreciate you doing this.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. During the quick commercial break, we had two breaking news items pop up. Hot Take Kiki, do you want to hear about what's happening in the NBA or the NFL first? I'll give you the choice.
Let's go NFL first.
Okay. The Denver Broncos. We had Mike Westhoff, who was the new assistant head coach, on last night. And we asked him about the defensive coordinating position. And we know that Rex Ryan interviewed, and he said that's out of his control. But, you know, obviously he would love to see Rex get the job. They spent today with an intriguing candidate for their vacant defensive coordinating job. I will keep the name out of it, as you will try to guess. Sources tell me and Tom Pelissero, whoever that candidate is speaking with Sean Payton today. Rex Ryan and Vance Joseph are also top candidates. Any idea who could have interviewed today that would be an intriguing name for the Broncos defensive coordinating job? I almost forgot about this fella. Anything you got?
Is it a guy who coached last year at any point?
That would be accurate.
Hmm.
And it's very surprising. I don't even think you're in the right ballpark yet, so I'll give you a big hint. It's very surprising that I would forget about his name.
Steve Wilkes.
No. Very surprising that I would forget about his
name. Brian Flores.
No. He's already with the Vikings.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Very surprising that I would forget this guy's name, because we may or may not have talked about this guy an abundance of times this year at the expense of yours truly. I am putting the ball right on the tee here.
Matt Patricia?
That would be correct.
No way.
What, do you think I'm lying to you?
They are seriously.
The Broncos spent today with an intriguing candidate for their vacant defensive coordinating job, per Ian Rappaport, Matt Patricia. Sources tell me and Tom Pelissero, the former Patriots assistant, is in Denver speaking with Sean Payton today. Rex Ryan and Vance Joseph are also top candidates.
Yikes.
Is it though? Yikes.
Yes.
If it was for him as an offensive position, or if it was for somehow they already have the head coach figured out, like, that'd be different. But the guy was fine as a defensive coordinator in New England. Like, some guys are just meant to be defensive coordinators, not defensive coordinators turned basically de facto offensive coordinators. And also, he should have, you know, him being a head coach, he was a disaster.
If he was this great of a defensive coordinator, why didn't Bill keep him on the defensive side? Why did he say, I'm going to put him on the offensive side?
Well, because you got Gerard Mayo and you got Steve Belichick there.
But he's a good offensive, good defensive mind. Don't you just want to, you know, Bill Belichick's the master of kind of, you know, doing, you know, kind of accentuating your strengths. Wouldn't you put another great mind on the defensive end, even if it's loaded, and just keep him there?
That's what I just got for you. That's all I have for you.
I would love to know how the interview goes.
I don't think he's a bad defensive mind, but, like, look at the other candidates. Like, Vance Joseph is probably the most attractive because he's been in the league on the defensive side of the ball most recently. And he's also the former Broncos head coach, which is a little bit bizarre.
Would be ironic, to say the least.
He's having the time of his life.
Oh, jeez. That's what we need. Bring Sergio Dip back for the opener.
And Rex Ryan, we all know, is a tremendous defensive mind, but he hasn't coached in like 7 or 8 years.
This is going to be an interesting defensive coordinating position if this is the three finalists.
Yeah. Do you know, by the way, where Steve Wilkes landed? Since you guessed him.
Clearly no. I forgot.
49ers defensive coordinator.
Oh, okay.
It's a pretty damn good one, too. Okay. Now, here is the NBA breaking news. Shams Charania, a.k.a. Kyrie Irving's best friend, Kevin Durant, this is Durant news, and the Phoenix Suns are targeting his Suns' debut and return to action next Wednesday's road game against the Charlotte Hornets, league sources tell The Athletic in Stadium. Durant is on the cusp of a return from MCL sprain that he suffered on January 8th. You know, I'll be rooting against the Dallas Mavericks this year because I can't stand Kyrie Irving, even though I love Luka Doncic and I'm a fan of Mark Cuban. But when it comes to the Suns, at first when Durant got traded there, I said, I don't want to root for them. Then when Durant sort of took a shot and was kind of like for the first time in 3 years honest about Kyrie, I go, okay, Durant is in a better spot with me. I'm not telling you I'm rooting for the Suns. I would much rather see Denver, Memphis, or Sacramento in the NBA Finals. But the Suns are a team that, is there a team in the NBA right now under more pressure than the Suns? Because I don't think so. Like, if you want to tell me Boston, because they got to the finals last year and it's open this year in the NBA, okay, I could entertain that. Giannis already won a ring. I don't think anyone believes that the Sixers are going to the championship this year. The Nets are now basically dunzo and irrelevant because they don't have Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving. Like, the Lakers, no one thinks they're making the playoffs. No one thinks they're going to win a championship. We'll see if they even make the playoffs. The Warriors just won one. And you have their dynasty continuing. The Suns got to be the team with the most pressure on them. Because you got Chris Paul, you got Booker, you add in Kevin Durant, you still have DeAndre Ayton somehow, and we all thought he was going to get eventually traded when the allotted amount of time did pass, and that wasn't the case. There's not a team in the NBA that's under more pressure for the rest of the year than the Phoenix Suns, Hickey.
I would probably agree, although I think the Denver Nuggets are right there. Like, they are neck and neck, where the Nuggets, if you are, you know, if this is not the year, I mean, that roster may have to, you know, we're looking at maybe not a Utah Jazz blow up like last year, but.
But does it feel like there's pressure on them? Like, are people constantly talking about the Denver Nuggets? Like, the Nuggets aren't polarizing. Like, I don't, like, the Suns, I think some people now think they're polarizing. They've been there before, and CP3's only getting older. Now you add Kevin Durant. Like, the Joker's great, but that injury fear is always there, especially with guys like Murray and Porter Jr., and you got Gordon there. Like, they got a good team. They were well on their way to going to the NBA Finals or being a legit contender, and then Murray blew, you know, his knee out, had the ACL injury. And he's now come back, and he's been really good. I know he's been banged up, but you look at this team, yeah, I'm not saying that they're – I just don't think there's going to be a big outcry if they don't win the championship. Like, because I don't think they're a group that really a lot of people could hate right now.
I'm not saying hate, but if they were sitting here about a second-round exit, I think that's different. When, like, that's when we're talking. So I think that's the pressure on, you know, if you make to the conference finals, lose to the Suns, okay, fine, not much you can do. If we're sitting here talking about a second-round exit to the Mavs or to the Kings, maybe someone in that elk, different story. I think the outcry is strong.
Okay. And by the way, how about Joe Klecko at the end of that interview? Basically saying he wants no part of Aaron Rodgers and he think Aaron Rodgers would ruin that young locker room.
I mean, is he wrong? Like, what's the difference between the Jets roster next year and the Packers roster from this past year on offense? A lot of youth.
Yeah, and
he hates the youth.
You could argue the running backs are better in Green Bay. And Garrett Wilson's a stud, but you have Christian Watson there who at the end of the season was a stud. Now, the Jets have a much better defense than Green Bay. But if that's the case, and just because Joe Klecko says it doesn't mean that that is going to be the case. But I thought Jeff Darlington did bring up a good point today when a lot of it got buried because he was saying that his very important Green Bay Packers source believes that Rodgers will be back with the team this season. If it is genuine what Diana Rossini has heard, and it wasn't just, oh, let me just kiss your ass because we're taking you out to dinner and we're talking to you, Derek Carr. If they believe that he could be a Hall of Famer, which is a joke, first off. But if they actually believe that, I know Rodgers is great, but he only has a window of maybe 2 or 3 more years at most, you would think. So if you don't have to give up anything to get Carr other than money, where it has to be picks for Rodgers, and you have a short window of 2 to 3 years, You know, I'd rather have Rodgers over Carr, but if the Jets really believe that Carr is the answer and that Carr could be a Hall of Fame quarterback, he could play for the next maybe 8 years or so, and all it is giving up money for him. So I thought that was a great point by Darlington. If you are that in love with Derek Carr, kind of decision's right there for you to make. But how long are you going to wait for Rodgers like it's Groundhog Day? All right, it's over. I don't see my shadow. I can run back into to the wilderness, and we can go back into the world. Light, I see you again. I really would love to have a camera. Hickey, you have one task. Figure out where Rodgers is hiding right now, and I want us to make a trip there to see him emerge out of this darkness retreat.